Royal to buy them the week necessary to get the new dish functioning properly. Then he would blind Front Royal, chill Cotter, take his bitch as his personal slut, loot everything there was, especially any puppies of those mutant dogs, so he could raise them as his own guards, and then melt the place to the ground. It made no sense to leave a stronghold like that so close to his Newville, where enemies could hide and prepare to launch an attack. The world was full of fools, but the thinking man ruled them all. Setting down the glass, Sheffield rose from his chair and began to strip for sleep. With the destruction of the gateway, Ryan had been neutralized, Silas was dead, and he had a new villain dish. A new era would soon begin in Deathlands, making the current days of bloody chaos seem like a pleasant afternoon. The whole world was in the palm of his hand, and soon he would start to squeeze. Kalashnikov in a steady grip, a Sekhman walked among the brick buildings of the Shiloh base, listening for any suspicious noises. The muties hadn't attacked for a while, and he was part of the new increased patrol to make sure the creatures didn't get inside the base again. And flying over the wall was just about the only way they could get inside. The hole was jam-packed with barbed wire and miscellaneous junk. Nobody and nothing was getting through that crap pile of explosives and glass. Watching the searchlight swing by overhead, the man glanced around and stepped into the shadows behind the Quonset hut. He lit a cig and drew in a lungful of smoke with a satisfied sigh. Then he went motionless. Someone stepped in and gently lowered the corpse to the ground, removed the cig, and crushed it under a boot. With a faint sucking noise, Jack removed the knife from the Sekhman's neck, where he had expertly inserted it into the man's brain. The blade was shiny clean now, so the teenager rubbed some dirt on the bloody blade to keep down the sheen, then moved on to the Quonset hut. A light was on above the only door, and two Sekhmen stood guard. But that wasn't his goal. Spotting some crates and barrels that generated a tiny pool of darkness near the back of the hut, Jack crawled along the ground until he was safely within the shadowed area. Sliding the charge off his back, he placed it against the cool, corrugated metal of the hut, the plas molding itself to the irregular surface and firmly adhering. Inserting a timing pencil into the bottom of the wad where it couldn't be seen, he snapped it off at the correct length, starting the silent chem fuse. Then he stabbed another timing pencil into the top of the wad where it couldn't help but be seen, and set the timing pencil for 2 hours. If a Sekhman found the charge, he would remove the wrong pencil trying to defuse the bomb, and think he was safe. One of the guards coughed, and the other softly made a rude comment of some kind that started both men laughing. Jack crawled backward from the ticking bomb, and the night swallowed him whole. Lunging into the pool of light, Doc skewered the Sekhman through the throat, removing any possibility of a cry of alarm. Startled, the dying man dropped his long blaster, and Christie caught the weapon before it clattered onto the hard ground. Then she grabbed his booted feet while Doc got the shoulders, and they hauled the man where nobody could see and neatly finished the job. Returning, Doc rubbed out the spilled blood with his boots, while Christie studied the surrounding buildings to see if anybody noticed the absence of the guard. No one had. Deciding the area was clear for the moment, they dropped to the ground and crawled across the few yards of open land to reach the closest support column. Safe in its web of shadows, they closely inspected the thick girder. The imposing array of riveted steel was strong enough to not only support the dish, but to also completely resist the push of any wind against the titanic mass. Finding a junction, Christie cupped her hands and boosted Doc up into the maze of metal. Using fingertip pressure, he molded the wad of plas into a long strip. Its job wasn't to blow a hole in the support column, but to weaken the strut sufficiently so that gravity would pull down the dish and complete the destruction. Hearing the sound of footsteps coming their way, Christie tapped Doc's shin, urging him to hide. Releasing the plas, the old man chinned himself into the struts, while Christie curled into a ball on the ground, making herself as small as possible. Smoking cigs, four Sekhmen walked by the companions, less than a yard away. Unseen blasters tracked the blues from the shadows until they crossed the street and went inside the barracks. Her hair writhing under the confining bandana, Christie hissed at Doc, and he redoubled his speed. He pressed the plaques into place, stabbed in the two timing pencils, setting the alternate times, and gracefully jumped to the ground. Glancing upward, Christie could see nothing amiss in the struts overhead, and nodded in satisfaction as they stealthily moved into the night once more, just as the searchlight swept over the blockhouse and support columns with its brilliant white light. Crouched outside the power plant, Ryan and JB could hear the steam boilers hissing loudly and the massive pumps pounding as they turned banks of generators to make the electricity to power the comps and the motors that operated the dish. This was the hard job. The others could plant their charges on the outside of the buildings, but that wouldn't work here. These explosives needed to be planted directly on the boilers. The taste of coal was thick in their mouths as the two men peered through a grimy window. Inside was a group of blues in T-shirts playing cards and drinking cold beer taken from a small fridge. Their shirts hung over the backs of their chairs, Kalashnikovs standing along the wall in a tidy row for fast access. Retreating from the window, Ryan tugged JB on the cuff and made a knocking motion. The armorer nodded. JB knocked softly. A grumbling voice demanded to know what the fuck was wrong now and shoved the door aside. Ryan fired the six salad twice in soft chugs, blood exploding from the sick man's throat and left eye. The man staggered backward, and the masked companions rushed inside the office, using the body as a shield. The blues stood up, shouting in surprise, only one of them going for a blaster. Ryan kneecapped the man, and he hit the floor inches short of the deadly rapid fires. They pushed the corpse into the others and pulled their knives, slashing throats and stabbing into armpits with deadly results. In under a minute, the floor of the office was awash with blood. The heat from the boilers was stifling. Reluctantly, Ryan and JB removed their bandanas and loosened their shirts, sweat already trickling the axle grease from their faces. A wall of glass windows fronted the office, but the glass was yellowed from the soot and condensed creosote, almost too dingy to see through. Ryan took a bloody shirt and rubbed a spot clean to peek inside the power plant. Apparently, they had chosen the right spot to strike. Beyond the office was the main floor of the boiler assembly. The chimneys were brick, but the boilers were seamless vats containing countless tons of pressure. Steam hissed from 100 joints in the feeder pipes and from the ever-cycling pistons. Ryan couldn't imagine how Silas got it here through the little gateway. It had to have already been here, something from pre-dark days that Silas repaired into a functioning power plant. What other explanation could there be? Testing a bottle, JB found the beer on the card table was still cold, and each man took a refreshing swig. Then, stepping out of the office, they began a security sweep of the place. JB and Ryan encountered five more sick men who quickly surrendered to their ready blasters, but died anyway. The companions moved on with ugly expressions. Chilling somebody who had given up was a hard task, but there could be no prisoners or quarter given on this night. Their job was extermination. Nothing less would do. But each man looked a little older as he finished the security sweep, and neither spoke, their minds focused on the completion of the job at hand and nothing more. Going around the blazing furnaces, the companions found a group of people shoveling chunks of coal from huge bins and tossing them directly into the open hearth of the furnaces. They were bare-chested and covered with soot and sweat. Ryan almost lowered his blaster to set them free when he noticed how well-fed they were, and with no whip marks on their muscular shoulders.
Blues!
JB cursed and cut loose with the Uzi submachine gun, sending a wreath of 9mm lead into the workers. Half the sec men died on the spot, while the rest dived for their weapons as Ryan emptied the Kalashnikov at them. Most dropped, but a 7.62mm round zinged off a thick shovel blade, and the snarling trooper managed to reach onto a shelf and grab a hand cannon. Ryan aimed high, while JB swept the sick man's legs with the Uzi, the mixed assault peppering the man and tearing him apart. Freed from the necessity of silence, the companions strode through the building shooting freely, chilling everybody they saw, until the power plant was a morgue full of the dead and the dying. Returning to the first boiler, Ryan stood guard, while JB extracted a huge plas charge and placed it directly under a main steam pipe and set the double pencils. He couldn't place the plas directly on the pipe, or the mounting heat would soften the stuff until it liquefied and dribbled off. But with this much explosives, a few feet of distance wouldn't make any real difference. When it ignited, the whole building would be blown sky high, hopefully taking the rest of the Ville along for the ride.